This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at HomeTeam.com.
I was told by one of my friends recently, if you're going to go get a loan, if you're going to go get it for $1 million, why not go get it for $10 million? Because $1 million loan is my problem. A $10 million loan is the bank's problem. Completely changed my mindset about debt and like how I can go leverage these things to be able to go grow my empire. Welcome back to the Color Money Podcast. I am joined today by my sidekicks, Miss Julia Lachey and Uncle Emmerich Peace. Welcome, you guys. We're going to touch today on something that I think is one of the most important pieces to starting that wealth building journey. And it's really built around credit. In today's episode, we're going to talk about unraveling some of the myths behind some of the critical aspects of personal finances. So whether you're looking to buy a house, buy a building, get a loan, or just simply manage your finances, we're going to talk about things and strategies that you should do, but also some of the things that we should not do. So welcome, you guys. Good to have you. How y'all doing this morning?
Doing fabulous. Thank you, Daniel.
Excellent. Now, I want to start this by telling everybody who's listening. It's the public service announcement. Your Credit Karma score is not your FICO score. I'm going to repeat that.
Wait, what?
Your Credit Karma score is not your FICO score. We get so many people when we're in buyer consults or when we're even taking loan applications that people think that their Credit Karma score, whether that score is low or high for that matter, that's what they're going to be using to qualify for a mortgage. And we've seen it both ways. We've seen people with their Credit Karma score in the fives and their FICO score in the high sixes. So I just wanted to start there because we have some really cool tools out there to help people manage their credit scores, but not all scores are the same.
Okay, first of all, just full transparency, I didn't know that. I thought that Credit Karma score was the score, man. I really did. And because you can click on the three different little things to the three different credit unions and it gives you your... I didn't know.
There's different models. So you have like a consumer score and then you have a mortgage score and you have like an auto loan score. So there's different, it's still using some of the same criteria, but right. Their models are a little bit different on how they actually score it to be able to qualify you for one of these different loans.
Well, the reason we're even having this conversation today is because, as we know, we promote homeownership as a way to build wealth. And one of the biggest barriers for Black people of color in general is often that credit score rating. Now there's some conversation. You may be aware, listeners, that there's been a lot of disputes about how that credit system is being used and the models that they're using to actually determine credit. NARAB has a report out about their position on the current credit models and how they are disproportionately affecting Black households. But moreover, we'll get into that later. But moreover, Daniel, I think it's important to note that you talk about the credit score number and the things. More than 50% of white households have a credit score that's over 50%. I'm sorry, 50%, over 700. So 50% of white households have a credit score over 700, compared to only 20% of Black households that have a credit score over 700. So do you have any idea what contributes to the gap in credit scores? We just talked about the homeownership gap on our previous episode, but what contributes to the gap in credit scores?
That's a really good question. I think it has something to do with credit limits on credit cards. So being responsible about debt. Now there's a lot of families, I don't know, I'm not going to say just white families, but there's a lot of families that we've learned in this journey of doing loans that it's a hack. You can go jump on your mom or dad's credit card with $100,000 credit limit and instantly inherit all of their credit history, all of the good payments on time. The credit lines can be older than the kids and instantly they have 750 credit scores. And so when you use that as a launching pad to then go get debt, because debt is all about the ability to borrow and repay in a timely fashion.
That's called the authorized user. You add them to the card as an authorized user. The authorized user credit scoring and credit rating carries the same weight as the actual card holder. So what you do is you go, they go on as an authorized user, mm-hmm. and they automatically get credit for it.
Yeah, I did that for my son, and he was trying to tell me, he was all in my face telling me about how he's responsible because his credit is good.
Yeah.
No, boy, my credit is good, right? You are just a freeloader on my credit because you are on my credit card. Yeah.
Right. And so these are like some of the hacks that are used, some of the ways that even some of my white friends' families coming up, the way they were having these conversations around credit cards or around debt. Oftentimes we get credit cards because we need more money. And so yeah. we go into debt and go into this spiral because we're getting these lines of credit because we can't just ask mom or dad or uncle or whoever for a loan or to help with this car payment or paying our bills on time or different things like that. So I think systemically we're starting off on a bad foot. And then when we start off doing credit in a bad way, it just only gets worse over time.
Well, you know, the biggest thing, though, I don't believe that we have enough conversation about credit. And I'm gonna be transparent. I'm a little guilty in that. Like, I taught my kids how to use money, and I never really taught them the proper way to use credit or not to use credit. And mm-hmm. so what happened is, and this just recently happened with my college graduate daughter, she decided that she was going to get an American Express card. She thought that an American Express card was like a regular card. So she got this American Express and she's all happy. And then she made some charges. So she thought that she was going to be able to pay that monthly minimum. Well, American Express is quite different because it's designed for you to pay the bill off at the end of the month. And if you don't, they tax you heavily on the interest. And when she told me what she did, I said, you can't do that. And we had this comment, and that's just in my household. She's a homeowner. I took her through everything. I just did not have an in-depth enough conversation about credit and credit card usage for her to really get it, because she was an all-cash person primarily before with little credit being used. And then she did this. So my point being, I believe that we don't have enough conversations about credit in our households, where I'm not sure what goes on in other households. They talk about credit and we don't talk about credit. We talk about money in some instances, and many instances we don't. We don't have a deep enough conversation about money.
Well, this and, is my... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I believe that's the big challenge. We talk about credit score. The other thing is we are visual people and we are immediate gratification people a lot of times. And so we get credit cards for those immediate gratification items. And the reality is that somebody got to pay for them. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. somebody's got to pay for them. And now you got four or five credit cards. You win an immediate gratification. You got $1,500 worth of payments. And you only have $800 left a month after you pay all your bills. So something's going to be left out there, and it's going to be the credit cards, which becomes the spiraling demise of our credit.
Yeah, and I don't think that this is a black or white issue. Specifically, what I'm going to say right now, I think this is an education school system issue. This is a curriculum in school issue. There is zero reason I need to be learning about history in the 1600s and all the things and like econ from 100 years ago and everything else. But you're not going to tell me what credit debt to credit ratios I should have. You're not going to tell me what good credit is and bad credit is and homeownership. Like, just it's astonishing to me that these aren't conversations being had in schools, and then it should also be had in the household as well.
Yeah. So what you're saying is you're telling me about all the things in the 1600s, and you're not telling me about all the things that's happening today.
Right. Now, full transparency, history was my worst subject. I don't like history very much at all, to be honest. But nonetheless, it's still we have to take electives, and I have to take Spanish, and I have to take French or whatever these other courses are. But I don't have to take a class on personal finance and credit. But it's a system that's designed to keep us in debt and keep American people down. And that's where I think it's a global thing and not just a race-based thing. which is it's super frustrating.
Yeah.
But what it exasperates is that you don't learn in school and you don't learn at homes. And as you become an adult, you don't believe that you have to know it because nobody told you you had to know it. So clearly it's not relevant in your life, which is not
true. Well, and that's what leads to some misconceptions. So I don't know if either of you can answer this question, but a lot of people have misconceptions about credit scores. They really don't understand how the credit score works, how they're made. Do you know any of those? I know, Daniel, you deal with loans and you have a mortgage company. So what are some common misconceptions that people have? And how can we, as the people who are having conversations with people, clarify them?
So the first thing is keeping your balances at zero. That doesn't help you at all because it's not showing the creditors that you're borrowing money and repaying it back on time. So that's the first thing. A lot of people are like, I pay my credit card off every month. Well, yes, but by doing that, you're also not showing the credit companies that you can borrow effectively. The second thing is not getting any credit at all. We see some people that don't have any credit and want to go get a home loan, and it's still good. We're still going to be fighting an uphill battle on other ways to try to qualify you. Right. This is
I was just going to tell you something about, and that's called credit utilization.
Yeah, that's right where I was going.
Take a look at credit utilization, and that's the part that we miss. But go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to go to is if you go over 30% of, like if you have a balance of $300 and that card available credit is, or total credit line is $1,000, that credit card is building your score every single month. If you borrow $400 in the same scenario and the line's $1,000, that has the potential to hurt you every month. If you're borrowing $900 and the line is $1,000, that is destroying your credit every month. So with that said, when we have a way, a tax return that we get, or there's always a client every month that has a settlement that's coming. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. But the settlement comes, or whatever the thing is, attacking your credit cards and paying them below that 30% number, well, you'll see 50, 60, 80 point jumps in your score almost instantly just by doing that.
That's good information.
It's crazy. Do that before you pay collection accounts. It's crazy.
You know, also, I think it's fair to mention that this whole credit system is an American thing. In other cultures, it's not a good thing to have debt, right? Like you mentioned that the dilemma for people is that they think it's good that they don't have any debt. Well, yes, in every other society, in every other country, it is a good thing. Like, you don't owe anybody. It's even biblical. But here in the United States, in order to get anything with credit, you have to owe somebody. And you have to show that you've had a history of owing somebody. It's a really different, it's a really twisted culture if you think about it. It's not how other cultures do business. They don't say it's a good thing if you owe somebody. They pay people what they owe people right away. And that's right. Not the American culture. And it makes it difficult, actually, for immigrants. Who come to America and now they have to play in this credit system that they never heard of, that makes no sense culturally to them, that makes no sense biblically to them, you know, that we're operating this way.
We see that all the time. Absolutely. Yeah,
it's you being subservient to the system. The system is the system. In order for you to use the system, you have to play by the system's rules, and the system's rules say you got to have credit, which... You know, like you said, it doesn't really make sense. I was deemed someone more fiscally financially if they did not have credit, which means that they don't overspend.
Yeah.
So I don't think I've ever told you guys, but I've always been an entrepreneur. My first business I ever started was called You First Credit Solutions, where I was helping people build their credit. So because my journey, like I got stuck bad really early, and my score was like in the fours, and I couldn't do anything. I couldn't get an account with the electric company, let alone a credit card or a loan or any way to get a line of credit to get me out of the situation. So then I went down this rabbit hole of studying, how do I fix this and how do I not get back into the same spot? And then how do I go help others? How can I go dispute things on my credit report that may not be real, or they're past 7 years old, and how can we get them off? Because the scoring model, once you understand it, then now you can start playing the game to benefit from it.
Well, talk about that. Talk a little bit about the scoring model and how you understand it. And when you're done, I'll talk to you about this new scoring model that's out, that's been introduced, as an alternative option. But how does the scoring system work in general?
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
In general, it's the thing that I've learned is the debt to credit ratio is the most important piece outside of like late payment. Like you got to pay your bills on time, right? But when you think about credit utilization, like that is the most important piece that's built into an actual credit score. So, and we think about the credit cards that we have, we may only have one $500 credit card and we're holding a $400 balance on it and it's destroying us every single month. So small, but all they care about is the percentage, not necessarily the amount of debt that we have. I was told by one of my friends recently, if you're going to go get a loan, if you're going to go get it for $1 million, why not go get it for 10 million? Because $1 million loan is my problem. A $10 million loan is the bank's problem. Completely changed my mindset about debt and like how... how I can go leverage these things to be able to go grow my empire. It's crazy. So the thing that they changed recently too with collection accounts, when you're looking at qualifying for a mortgage, a collection account under $2,000 doesn't even hurt your credit score anymore. Mm. So oftentimes we've got to understand we have the tool inside of our mortgage company. And again, I built a mortgage company with a real estate hat on. I had a lot of clients early in my real estate career that had credit issues and no one wants to do credit repair or credit repair has a bad name. So we have this model inside of our company where we can get you on a path and it's literally a simulation where we can use these little bars and understand if we pay this down to this number, you get this change in your score. It's really cool.
Well, and that speaks to what Emmerich was saying on the previous episode. Emmerich said, you know, when people are trying to figure out what to do to fix their credit, seek professional advice. Because what you just said, Daniel, like some people not seeking professional advice would say, oh, let me pay this $150 hospital collection and then let me pay this $120 collection. And what you just said is that doesn't even matter so to your score. And so if you don't meet somebody like you, you know, you start trying to fix all the wrong things if you've not been guided by an actual professional.
And we know what we're doing. And when we're using these credit simulation tools, it makes no sense. Why, if you pay this credit card lower and leave the balance high on that one, you get a higher score than if you paid off both credit cards? It makes no sense. But because it's so complicated, that's the reason you got to get with professionals to understand here's the play, here's the game, here's the model that we need to do to go. We call it credit enhancement rather than credit repair, because oftentimes we're just getting a little bit of a lift. When we're talking about mortgages, if you go from 620 to a 660 credit score, you get better interest rates. Better interest rates will give you a lower payment or it will increase your purchase power. Mm-hmm. If we go from 660 to over 720, now we're qualifying for all the best things with everything. And that may be a very small change in what you pay or when you pay it to be able to get that lift that you need. It's wild.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of the credit scoring models, I'm going to read a paragraph from the SHIBA report. If you're not familiar, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, the Black Real Estate Association, provides a report every year called the SHIBA report, State of Housing in Black America. And in the report last year, they speak about the credit score model changes. So it says in October 2022, FHFA, of course, somebody calls me while I'm trying to read it on my phone. Let me go back. So it says in 2022, FHFA announced new guidelines for the credit score models accepted by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac when scrutinizing mortgage loans. Lenders will be able to evaluate borrowers using a FICA 10T, which looks back over at least 24 months of a borrower's credit activity rather than considering just a snapshot of the day the credit report was requested. Lenders will also be allowed to use Vantage score models, which usually requires shorter credit histories compared to a FICO. More sophisticated scoring models consider data from additional sources, such as payments for rent, utilities, or cell phone services. These changes may allow more borrowers, especially among those who have historically been excluded from homeownership, to qualify for mortgages. However, it may take time for the implementation of these changes to make a significant impact. What do you think about that, Credit Man?
So I think are you talking to Emmerich?
I'm talking to you.
I think like the, it's I think it's good and bad. The fact that I can still be damaged by something I did 6 years ago is painful. But also if somebody's asking me for $500,000, I want to know who they are, who they've been, and what happens today. Looking over 24 months may not be enough to really avoid foreclosure. And I'm speaking specifically for mortgages because these are 30-year commitments. And oftentimes we don't look at it like that when we go apply for a loan or buy a house. But we're getting married for 30 years and you've got to be on your best behavior for 30 years in order for me to get my money back. It's a wild concept. So I think it will help in the interim, people with checkered pass on being able to qualify for more, have higher scores. I think it will also level the playing field a little bit. I'm just curious on what that, if we had a way of simulating this and then running it 10 years from now, is that going to lead to more foreclosures, more bankruptcies, more credit debt, some of those additional things?
Well, from the perspective of NARAB, it's gonna lead to more people being able to have access because the FICO models have not always been necessarily structured in a fair manner, right? So it's the credit, the whole thing is interesting, but not to get too deep into that. If I'm somebody who's like, okay, look, I got bad credit, whatever that number may be today, how does one pull themselves up from the depths of hell of credit hell to participate in this home ownership thing?
Well, it comes back to, as I said earlier, seek professional help. And it's also going to be a change in lifestyle or a change in habits of what people have. Because most people, what I see, most people who have poor spending habits, just because you get them on a path for their credit, I've seen too many times where their credit gets fixed and then they go right back out and run the cards back up again. And so it's a change of habit. It's not just a change in credit score. It's a change in habit, which means that they've been properly educated on what they should not do in order to go back to the place that they were. And at the end of the day, seek professional help, competent professional help, and not the hookup. Because we're famous for getting the hookup. Somebody told me if I give them $1,000, they can remove this charge off from my credit.
Well, okay, yeah, let's talk about that. I hear that all the time.
The temporary, you mean until the creditor realizes somebody removed it, and when they go back to do their audit and they realize that somebody removed it and they add it back on 3 months later? Because they know you still owe them the money.
Is that how it works? Because people say, hey, I got a guy, you can pay him $1,000, he'll take that straight off the credit. Yep.
They take it off, and then the creditor realizes that they still don't have their money because they do an audit on the they do an audit. And guess what they do? They add it back on.
Yeah. They can refresh it. The way that you really get bad debt off is things that are outside of 7 years or things that are not yours. So for instance, my wife had the same name as her mother. So we had to go fight for her because her mom's stuff. You know what's weird? Women, when they have the same name, they don't go by junior.
No, why? That's not how it works.
But why wouldn't you do that? If I name my son the same name, he's junior. If we name my daughter the same name as her mom, she should be junior too. Anyway,
she should be juniorette.
Right.
Something. But anyway, I digressed. So yeah. we had to go fight that and prove social security numbers with the debts to prove these are not hers to then get them removed. Right. But a lot of the hacks is we're going to, and sometimes this works where you pay somebody, they're going to go fight them to remove the score. I think it's within 30 days or 14 days they have to respond and validate the debt that you're contesting.
Is it 30 days? 30 days.
They have to validate it. And if they don't validate it, then it immediately has to, if they don't go back to the credit bureau and say, this is the debt and here's the proof, then it's removed from the credit score, from your credit report, your score goes up. But to Emmerich's point, then when they do the audit, they have valid information that this is your debt that's owed, that's within that 7 year period. And then that thing goes right back on again. So it's a short term fix.
So here's the deal. It's removed long enough for you to go through the loan process and then you get a loan. And then after you get your loan, it comes back on your credit. And then you don't care anymore because you've accomplished your objective. Your objective not was to clear your credit up. Your objective was to make a major purchase, buy a house and fix it long enough to get those things done, which is probably not the best thing to do. However, it works for the intended purpose for the time that they required it. And that's what they do.
When I think through and through, there's no shortcuts to, there's no shortcuts in this life of wealth building and growth. Like, you've got to do the work. You've got to pay your bills on time. You've got to reduce your credit limits. There's good debt and there's bad debt. And so when we think about the things, oftentimes I hear the things you should do. But I think one of the easiest things that we can do is understand what we shouldn't do. If we just don't do these things, then we'll grow in these areas. So here's a quick list of 6 things you should not do. You should not miss any payments. Pay your bills on time. If things get tight, you can pay your bill on day 29. Don't pay it on day 31. If you pay it on day 29, it doesn't report on your credit as a missed payment. If you pay it on day 31, you get a 30-day late, which is going to damage your credit. Maxing out your credit cards. Again, we talked about credit utilization. Don't go above 30% of whatever that card is worth. Applying for too much credit, especially too much credit at once. For a mortgage, you can apply for multiple mortgages with multiple mortgage companies, and it all gets assembled at the end of the month as one credit inquiry. Right. If you go apply for 3 or 4 credit cards, you can go get 3 or 4 credit cards. And so those all will hurt you by applying for too much debt. Number 4, closing old accounts. Some of the old accounts that you don't use anymore is the reason your score is where it's at. So you have to keep them open, even if it's a zero balance, but you had it for 10 years, you don't use that Target credit card anymore, it's still a value to you. And the last piece of it, do not ever, 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 ever co-sign for anyone for any reason at any time.
Do not
co-sign for anyone for any reason at any time. It will destroy your future.
That's the other one. That's the other one that hits our credit score, because we do co-sign. We do co-sign a lot for people. It doesn't affect your credit. I just need somebody to help me out a little bit, and you have good credit, so help me out a little bit if you just sign your name here. And then they stop, and then they don't make payments on the car, and the creditor's calling you. I'm just telling you, years ago, I had to pay some debt off because I co-signed. And I said, well, I just co-signed. Well, no, you didn't just co-sign. You committed to be obligated for this debt. And I paid it off. I didn't like it. And that was my lesson on co-signing. If you co-sign it, you agree to pay it, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've had to tell friends no, family members no, because not that I don't trust you or believe that you're going to pay it, I can't take the risk on my future on you missing a payment.
Right.
And I think the other piece of it, like if someone asked you for that, my mindset is I'll go get the car and you can rent it from me. Because then I'll make sure the payment's paid every month. And if you're not paying me, then I can go take the car back.
Right.
The thing about co-signing is you don't know when the payment's not made until it's too late. And now you're scrambling. Money can't repair your credit. The only thing that can repair your credit is time. And that's a frustrating thing sometimes.
I love that. Money can't repair your credit. The only thing that can repair your credit is time. Oh, man, that's it. You gave us a whole mouthful right there, Daniel.
It's real. And it's frustrating seeing people that struggle with a co-sign that they did 2 years ago and they didn't know about the 4 late payments. And we can't qualify them for a mortgage because of that. Well, it's not mine. I know, you just shouldn't have done it. So that's why I wanted to leave with that one, because it's arguably one of the most important pieces. Protect your credit as if it's your own. Don't give it out. Don't give it to people. Monitor it. Look at it. Make sure you're not having fraud or other people using your social security number that can hurt you or help you for that matter. Protect it as it like it's very important. So love it and protect it and keep it close to you.
Cool.
All right. Any last things or any last words that we should tell our listeners? Or as I normally say, what's the one thing we should leave our listeners with about credit and about improving their credit or understanding their credit?
Well, let me just say this. Everybody does not have bad credit.
Okay.
Credit is an extended lifeline, because I hear people say all the time, well, everybody got bad credit. Everybody's got some late payments. No, they don't. So let's just be conscious that, you know, these are things that you do today that will dramatically impact your life in the future. Credit.
Yeah. And I think for me, just pay attention, know where you're at. understand where you're trying to go. It's never too early to get prepared for a home purchase. It's never too early to understand where your credit's at and then monitor it and look at it consistently.
All right.
What about you, Julia? What's your one thing?
My one thing is just know where you stand, right? Know where you stand and seek the proper, like you echoing what you've said, seek the proper professional to help you get where you need to be if you're not currently where you need to be. But also we know that a lot of people might be and don't know, but that goes back to just finding out where you are.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you guys today. I think this is going to be a really, really important episode, because this is where it starts for a lot of folks on their wealth building, or their financial journey. So thank you guys today. Until next time, have a good day, friends.
All right. Thank you. See y'all later.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.